Now, as we are commencing the short talk through which we are commemorating the birth anniversary of Madame Blavatsky, we shall consider a few, or rather a very brief sketch about her life. Madame Blavatsky was born on August 12th in the year 1831, and the place where she was born comes within the present day nation called as the Ukraine. She was born to Colonel Peter von Hahn and Elena Andreevna. Now, Madame Blavatsky herself never had any inclination to boast about her lineage. But it is right to give a brief note on the same in this instance. For example, her mother herself was an accomplished novelist, and the lineage on her mother's side can be traced all the way, back to the founder of Russia. On her father's side, her German heritage can be traced back to the famous medieval crusaders. That is only a very brief sketch about her lineage. And coming particularly to the time of her birth, it is recorded as she was born close to midnight, and the place in Ukraine where she was born has a very special significance in the history of Russia itself. And it was near her place of birth that the founder of Russia actually set up this kingdom. Now, Madame Blavatsky was born premature, as the record goes. And therefore, there are very interesting circumstances which surround her birth itself and her baptism. What happened was that her family decided to perform an immediate baptism as soon as Madame Blavatsky was born, because she was born premature, and when she was born, she was in a very delicate state of health, very weak, a weakling, one might say. So the family thought that an immediate baptism is in order, lest she should die with the burden of original sin on her soul. So this is the setting when she was born premature. Therefore, quickly arrangements were made, and a room in the mansion in which her family was staying was selected for the performance of the ceremony of baptism. A lot of details are there, but to quickly cover, when the ceremony of baptism was going on, and the time had arrived for the act of renouncing the evil one and his deeds, a young girl of 2 years old, more contemporary of Madame Blavatsky, although she is called as her aunt. Now, she was playing with a lighted candle and inadvertently set fire to the robes of the priest who was performing the baptism ceremony, and the priest suffered burns. Her birth and her baptism itself is ominous of the undertakings which she actually took up later in her life, where her magnum opus thoroughly dismissed and set fire to the dogmas of religious organizations. So it's very ominous that this happened at the time of her birth. As a result of such a happening at the time of her birth, the town quickly decided that it was a bad omen for them too. This is one instance. Also, another you know, a kind of a epidemic was going on in the place of her birth, at the time of her birth, because there was an outbreak of cholera, and many people had fallen prey to this outbreak. So this is the setting in which Madame Blavatsky is born. But all was not bad, because a person who was born on that particular day and at that particular time when Madame H.P. Blavatsky was born is considered as a person who is endowed with the power over evil forces and witches, according to Russian folklore. So this is the scenario surrounding her birth. And coming to her childhood, her father was obviously in the Russian army. He was attached to an artillery unit. And as is the case today, you know, the men who are in army are constantly transferred. Same was the case during her childhood. Father was transferred from one end to the other of Russia. So, Madame Blavatsky spent her childhood traveling around with her father, along with her father, wherever he was posted, from one place to another. And these travels took her from one end of Russia to another, to small isolated posts where hardly anyone would be present. Such posts were assigned to her father. And also, like it is today for the people in the armed forces, a few much sought after postings were there even in those days. So for a few years, when her father was posted in the cosmopolitan St. Petersburg as an artillery officer attached to the Russian army, she spent a few years of her childhood in St. Petersburg too. So, from a very early age, Madame Blavatsky had, you know, wide experience with peoples from various cultures. Because Russia, if you consider the area of the land itself, is so vast, and it encompasses so many different cultures and peoples. And it is very interesting to note that even at a very tender age of about 9 to 10 years, there are witnesses who recount that all her sympathies and attractions went towards the people who were mostly from the, you know, lower rung of the society. And she had always preferred to play with her you know, servants' children rather than what one would term as her equals. In fact, it is also recorded that she showed a kind of indifference towards nobility. Although her lineage on both her parents' side it's grand. This is about one side of childhood of Madame Blavatsky. On the other hand, even in her younger days, she showed an inclination towards studying books day and night. It is said that she used to devour the books day and night when she used to stay with her grandparents. And the large library which was there in her grandparents' home seemed small to satisfy her. This is another aspect of her childhood. Another very interesting characteristic of hers was that during her childhood days, she was in the habit of telling people what they thought about them to their faces. And this used to cause much embarrassment to her relatives and family, and used to place them in an awkward situation in a social gathering. So during her childhood, we see a kind of a mixture of her humble nature and kind nature, and yet a kind of a daring attitude. And further, even at such a tender age, she used to gather around her many other children, and she would narrate them and relate to them stories which involved concepts like reincarnation and metempsychosis. And many children were interested in those stories. Of course, it may seem like it is all made up and fancy, but the stories contained such ideas. And she was a great storyteller even in her younger days. And it was during this time that she used to have visions of a figure in front of her eyes. She used to have visions of a protector. And these visions of the protector and the features of this protector, which she used to envision, seemed never to change. And it is probably because of such a protector that her invulnerability to harm is credited. Later on, she met that person of her visions as a living man. We'll come to that a little later. But it is clear from the recordings of many witnesses that strange happenings surrounded HPV's life even during her childhood. If we go by certain principles of evidence, if such occurrences and such evidence of the witnesses were too few and too far, then the probability of that being ignored would be high. But such instances are too many to ignore. In fact, in the beginning of one of Madame Blavatsky's works, she refers us to a rule of evidence, which was proved using algebraic method. And that method is somewhere stored in a library in Paris. It's a pretty interesting axiom which has been proved. And of course, we find that implemented in many of the laws even today. The thing is that there are many strange occurrences surrounding her childhood. Now, another interesting phase of her life is, you know, at the age of 18, she came to marry a person. And all this because she was challenged by her governess to find any man who would be her husband, keeping in view her temperament and her disposition towards a certain class of peoples. Of course, she married. She married. However, the marriage did not sustain. And soon after that, she left Russia. And this point marks the beginning of her travels. Madame Blavatsky has traveled across and around the world for decades together. And this point marks the beginning of those travels and learning that happened during those travels. So, however, in the years that passed, there is not much information available regarding HBB's life, as she did not maintain a journal or a diary. However, she kept her father informed about her whereabouts, lest they should worry too much about her. And her father, being also of an understanding nature, used to, you know, send her some money so that she could sustain herself whenever he could and wherever she could receive the money. So this was the kind of an arrangement with, you know, she had with her father. So Madame Blavatsky traveled all alone in those days across the globe, and starts with Turkey, Greece, Egypt, and France. For a year, she spent traveling around these countries. So this is at the age of around 18 to 19 and 20 years of age. So she was born in 1931. By the age of 18 or 19, she started her travels. At the age of 20, there is again another particularly memorable incident which occurs, because 1851 was also the 1851 was also the year when the Great Exhibition was held in London, Hyde Park, and all the latest inventions of science and technology from across the British Empire was displayed in Hyde Park in London in 1851. It is in this grand background HBB met her protector and teacher of her dreams in person. Although there is no exact record as to what happened during that meeting, but it is said that a general outline of the work which Madam H.P. Blavatsky was to carry on in the future was discussed during this particular meet with her teacher in London. So her travels took her next to the Americas, where she intended to learn about the Native Americans, and she investigated the practices of voodoos, and she also realized the dangers that are associated with such practices. From there, she proceeded further down to the Central and South America, where she visited the ancient ruins of the civilizations which were there. From here on, she proceeded to India and planned to visit Tibet. But this first attempt of Madame Blavatsky's wanting to travel to Tibet did not succeed, and unfortunately she had to return to England. And thereafter, yet again she traveled to America, and this time she traveled with the emigrants in caravans, and like it is popularly called in the America, you know, go west, young man. She too traveled west in America and reached the Grand Pacific Ocean. But she did not stop there. She traveled further west from Pacific Ocean and reached Calcutta. And here is yet another interesting period in Madame H.P. Blavatsky's life, because this time when she was in India, she traveled across the length and breadth of India with her teacher. And a few of her experiences during her travels in India this time are published as articles in the then Moscow Chronicle. Moscow Chronicle was one of the top newspapers in Russia in those times. And her experiences of her travels in India are published as articles, in that Moscow Chronicle. Here, she wrote those articles under the pen name Radha Bai. The peculiarity or the speciality of these short articles is that they fictionalize and record her travels with her teacher. And her teacher appears in these articles under the pseudonym of Gulab Singh. And yes, a compilation of those articles is available today. And it is published in the form of a book. Even this time when she was in India, she was able to make it into Tibet, but she was soon directed to leave India before the troubles of the first war of Indian independence of 1857 began. So this time again, she returned to Europe, and for a while she was back in Russia. So once back in Russia, naturally her relatives wanted to know all about her travels in much detail. However, HPB never gave out the entire details of her travels till the end. And this was also a period when Madame Blavatsky was letting the psychic forces play in her, and was learning to fully understand these forces and to control them. So this is the reason many around her, felt a mysterious atmosphere surrounding her when she was in Russia during this time. And being a traveler, she again traveled to France and stayed there for a while. And while she was in France, she did entertain a few persons who were, mostly interested in phenomena. And it produced a lot of interest even in those days in believers as well as non-believers of such phenomena. Many undertook to disprove these phenomena and came up with the most absurd of the hypotheses to disprove such happenings. But it remains that much interest was invoked regarding these strange phenomena. Now, further on, she went to the Caucasus. And here she contracted a mysterious illness, which literally reduced her to a skeleton. So the doctor ordered her back to Russia. And she was back in Russia. And this was the phase when she appeared to be in full control of these forces, which she was earlier learning to exercise control over. And she further spent a few years in Russia, and she recovered from her illness and resumed her travels. And this time she traveled to Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Jerusalem, Egypt, Greece, and Italy. And it is recounted by some evidence that it is during this time and these travels that she studied the Kabbalah under a learned rabbi. It was also reported that she took part in the many battles which involved the revolutionary called Garibaldi and Mazzini, and but however, for the reasons best known to her, she denied it. But there are certain witnesses and evidences which point to her taking part in them, and you know, suffered many wounds during many battles. Very interesting stories. Later on, she again moved to India, this time, the third time. And this time she finally got into Tibet, and she spent more than 3 years in Tibet. And the important thing which she did during her stay in Tibet this time was that she was with her teachers. And she studied the text, the portion of which was later published as The Voice of Silence. During this time in Tibet, Madame Blavatsky learned two languages. One language is called as the Senzar. The Senzar language is the, you know, it's the mystic name for a sacerdotal language or the mystery speech which is used by initiated adepts all over the world. In this language, she was, you know, undertaking exercises every day of translation. And it is in this language that the stanzas which form the basis of her magnum opus, The Secret Doctrine, and The Voice of Silence were originally claimed to have been written. And it may surprise us, but the other language which HPB learned during her time in Tibet was the English language. Being a Russian herself, she was not much acquainted with the English language, and she learned English language while she was in Tibet, and she used to translate verses from Sanjar to English and back, and her masters would correct her if she went wrong in translation. Now, after she left Tibet, she again traveled to Egypt, Syria, Palestine, Constantinople, and then finally she went back to Russia and stayed with her family for about a year. Where after that she moved to Paris, and while in Paris she received an order from her teachers to go to New York. The next day she sailed to New York. Even while she was about to onboard the ship which was about to set sail to New York, a very interesting incident occurs. When she was about to board the ship, she saw a poor woman accompanied by her two children who were sitting near the pier, and they were weeping bitterly. And when HPB asked, why are you crying? The woman replied that her husband had sent them just enough money to enable her and their children to join him in America. And the woman had been cheated by, you know, she was sold counterfeit tickets, so she could not get on board. Madam H.P. Blavatsky, you know, as always ready to help, she went straight to the agent of the ship company, and she exchanged her first-class ticket for the lower-class tickets for herself and the woman and her children. So this is the, you know, kind of characteristic that marks the whole life of Madam Blavatsky. Now, when once in America, the works which were undertaken, it would take volumes upon volumes to just describe them. So I will run through them. In America, when she was in New York, the Theosophical Society was founded by Madame Blavatsky together with Colonel Olcott, Judge, and others. It was here that she published her first great work, Isis Unveiled. She became further an American citizen, and then she left for India with Colonel Olcott, settling in Bombay. And in Bombay, she starts another magazine called as the Theosophist, which resulted in the rapid growth of theosophical work in India. Later on, she moved to Adyar. After spending nearly 6 years in India, she left for Europe once again, and later on came back to India. This time she fell gravely ill and she left India for good. And proceeding from India this time, she settled down in Germany, where she wrote the major portion of her magnum opus, The Secret Doctrine. And further on, she moved to London and established the Blavatsky Lodge. And she started her second magazine called as The Lucifer. Later on that year, Secret Doctrine was published for the world. Further, she also published Key to Theosophy and The Voice of Silence. Now, the major works undertook by Madame Blavatsky, it has been covered in a very brief compass here. And the reason for that is it would take a student quite some time to acquaint oneself with the works of Blavatsky. However, a very brief note is presented. The magnum opus Isis Unveiled was first published, followed by The Secret Doctrine. The other work is The Key to Theosophy, which presents a very broad outline of the wisdom religion in the form of a dialogue between enquirer and theosophist. The other work is The Voice of Silence, which was translated by her from the language called Sensar to English. And there is another book which is not much known, and it is called as Gems from the East, a birthday book of precepts and axioms, which was compiled by Madame Blavatsky herself, and it was compiled chiefly from Oriental sources. And Transactions of Blavatsky Lodge is another important work which provides answers to various questions. The questions are both metaphysical as well as scientific. And this work was stenographically reported and afterwards revised by H.P.V. for publication. Even till the last days, her life was filled with much activity, though her body was worn out. And still she worked day and night at her desk, when actually she ought to have been in bed and resting. And during the last few months of her life, she was busy preparing yet another work called as the Theosophical Glossary, which is a kind of a dictionary of the terms which are used in theosophical literature. And she also rewrote some occult stories. Her last letter was to the Convention of American Theosophists, and it contained rather prophetic messages and warnings. So to sum up briefly, the life of Madame Blavatsky in a way epitomizes the pledge of Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin being the Buddhist goddess of mercy. And the pledge reads thus: Never will I seek nor receive private Never will I enter into final peace alone, but forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world. So the life...
Shashank, your voice got cut. Can you just repeat that? Your voice got cut in between.
Oh, sorry. As I was presenting, the life of HPB in a way epitomizes the pledge of Kuan Yin, the Buddhist goddess of mercy. And the pledge reads thus: Never will I seek nor receive private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone, but forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world. So in a way, Madame Blavatsky's life exemplifies the highest duty, which is aptly conveyed by the words in the Holy Bible, Matthew 20:28, which reads thus: Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. Much is not said about Madame Blavatsky's other talents, but she was also an accomplished musician and was a member of a Philharmonic Society. And for a while, she also supported herself by engaging in commercial enterprises, as she was a master of needlework and very skilled in making beautiful artificial flowers. And now coming to the impact of Madame Blavatsky's work, for example, in the realm of sciences, Madame Blavatsky's works had anticipated significant discoveries, and those discoveries include that of X-rays, radioactivity, the discovery of radium and electron. And she also anticipated certain principles. For example, the principle that atoms are divisible, and that the atoms are perpetually in motion, and that the matter and energy are convertible. You know, these are a few examples of the principles in sciences which the works of Madame Blavatsky had anticipated. It is also a matter of record that many scientists have been interested in the works of Madame Blavatsky. And coming to the biological sciences, Madame Blavatsky's work has actually anticipated the beginning of genetics, and not to mention the first volume of The Secret Doctrine, which is named as Cosmogenesis, which talks about the beginning of the universe. Madame Blavatsky's work has also inspired Irish literary renaissance. And the record of this renaissance is, it's quite magnificent, actually. And the contributions of the efforts made by Blavatsky cannot be overlooked when it comes to the nationalist movements across the globe, including India, and the founding of Indian National Congress. For example, the first Indian Chief Justice of Madras High Court, Sir Subramanya Iyer, is also one of the members of Theosophical Society and founder members of Indian National Congress, and he was popularly known as Grand Old Man of South India, a very eminent Theosophist who personally knew Madame Blavatsky as a member of Theosophical Society. And the revival of the heritage and faith of India was overshadowed by foreign influences for quite some time. But to pay a homage to the contribution of Madame Blavatsky's work to India particularly, we can directly quote from Dr. Sarvepalli Radhakrishnan, that great Indian philosopher and statesman. And he expressed the view that the influence of Theosophical movement on general Indian society is incalculable. And this is a quote from Dr. Radhakrishnan. Further, the government of India itself, commemorating the 100th anniversary of the founding of Theosophical Society in 1975, issued a special stamp which displays the seal and the motto. And the motto being, there is no religion higher than truth. So be it the nationalist movement of many nations, or be it the examples which is set by her own life, exemplifying the highest duty a man may perform, or be it the restoring of dignity of self or home rule, her ideals and her works have always inspired people across the globe, as well as India. Now, coming to the later events which transpired after the death of Madame Blavatsky, there was some certainty. Although initially after her death, there was a show of stability by the members, eventually the organizational vested interests took over, and you know, the society started to crumble upon the crumble within itself because of the organizational weight, as well as the common weaknesses which arises from the weakness and failures of human nature. And the society was no exception to this. And it just so turned out that the concentration on organizational matters took precedence over unity and cooperation among the members. So eventually the society split into many parts. But one of the ardent students of Mr. William Quan Judge in 1909, you know, quietly came out and he formed a small nucleus and started the United Lodge of Theosophists in America. Now it has grown into a worldwide movement. One interesting feature of United Lodge of Theosophists is that there is no organizational structure here. And in that sense, there are no leaders and there are no office bearers or any person carrying any organizational authority. At best, the members are all students of Theosophy. And there are no persons who are teachers in United Lodge of Theosophists. The teacher is the literature of the movement as given out by the founders of the Theosophical movement of our times, namely Madam H.P. Blavatsky and William Quan Judge. So this is the objective with which United Lodge of Theosophists was founded by Mr. Robert Crosby in USA in 1909. Meanwhile, in India, there was a very successful businessman who had made great success in the textiles. And he was also initiated with the works of Madam Blavatsky. So this businessman, once he came in touch with Theosophical literature, he sold his entire business and completed all his family engagements, and then decided to dedicate himself entirely to Theosophical Theosophy, the cause of Theosophy. And this gentleman was Shri B.P. Wadia. And he moved into Adyar, and under the instructions of Master, whom he had met in Elephanta Caves. When he was in Adyar, his dedication and hard work was soon recognized, and he was he rose to the position to becoming an assistant editor to the magazine, The Theosophist, started by Madam Blavatsky. He also was involved in the Home Rule movement, and he was also a renowned labor leader because he was the founder of the first labor union in India, in Madras. In fact, the then British government had appointed Sri B.P. Wadia to be the delegate to attend the first international labor conference under the League of Nations, which was held in Washington, D.C. This was in the year 1919. When he was in USA, he came across an interesting newspaper advertisement about United Lodge of Theosophists. And he visited the lodges of United Lodge of Theosophists there. And after many discussions with the associates there, he accepted an assignment to speak on the subject, Madam Blavatsky and the Secret Doctrine. Here is where he discovered the works of Mr. William Quan Judge, which had been ignored for more than a quarter of a century back in Adyar. And once he was back in Adyar, he tried to revive the works of Mr. Judge, but he found no support. And during his visit to Europe as a delegate of the government, the then government of India, to the Second Labour Convention, which was this time held in Geneva, he decided to sail to America from Geneva. And he unsuccessfully tried to change the minds of the society, but his vision was not accepted. his vision was back to Blavatsky and to restore the position of Mr. William Quant Judge, who was until then considered as a renegade. Since his efforts to revive the society from within failed, he joined the United Lodge of Theosophists, and from there he extensively traveled the globe, and he started many lodges across the globe. And one such lodge is the Bangalore United Lodge of Theosophists, which Sri B.P. Wadia started in the year 1942 on the birth anniversary of Madame Blavatsky. Now, we are celebrating, or rather commemorating, the 78th anniversary of Bangalore ULT. And the programs have been going on because of the support, voluntary support of the students and students only. The teachers are not persons, but the literature, as given out by Madame Blavatsky and Mr. William Quant Judge. Yes, the objectives of this lodge, being an autonomous body, is the objectives of Theosophical Society. However, the objectives of this society are tried to accomplish within the four corners of the Declaration of United Lodge of Theosophists, which was drafted by Mr. Robert Crosby, who was the founder of United Lodge of Theosophists. The meetings in the Bangalore Lodge are held three times in a week. The first meeting in a week happens on Saturdays at 5 p.m., where the works of Mr. Judge or Madame Blavatsky, the shorter works and the more easier works, which are to understand by Madame Blavatsky and Judge, they are considered. The second meeting of the week happens on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m., where currently the magnum opus of Madame Blavatsky, The Secret Doctrine, is being considered. And Sunday evenings, the third meeting of the week, is reserved for a short talk on various subjects involving day-to-day topics, which is presented from a theosophical perspective. So this is a brief note about the work which is carried on by Bangalore ULT. Without any stoppage, for the past 78 years, through the support of the students. So therefore, when we look at the life of the founders of the Theosophical movement, be it Madame Blavatsky or Mr. Judge, who was her partner in her work, or for that matter, Mr. Robert Crosby, who founded the United Lodge of Theosophists, or the sacrifices made by Mr. B.P. Wadia, and considering the testimony of our own philosopher, statesman, Dr. Radhakrishnan, it is apt to say that the life of persons like this makes us think that, to quote in Latin, ars longa vita brevis, which means the art is longer, although the life of such persons is very, very short. And this idea is also captured very well in one of the verses of Dhammapada, the chapter Flowers, which reads that the scent of the flowers travels not against the wind, be it tagara or mallika or even of the sandalwood tree, but the fragrance of the good wafts even against the wind. The fragrance of the good man pervades all his ways. So I think it is our privilege to come across such teachers in our lifetime. And with a note of thanks to all the teachers, we conclude this short meeting where we commemorate the twin birth anniversary of H.P. Blavatsky and Bangalore United Lodge of Theosophists. Thank you all and good day.